Hey everybody, Jason Burmis here, and I am very happy to bring you a live ex-BBC journalist, investigative reporter, and Bilderberg expert, Tony Gosling. Tony is a real expert on this, and this year, when there seems to be so much in the dark, after, you know, getting the Bilderberg Group, not to give us a lot of transparency, but build a website, put out an agenda, tell us the location and date. Well, that hasn't happened this year, and it's troubling a lot of people. So let's welcome our guest. Thank you for doing this, Tony.
Oh, hi, Jason. Yes, quite proud to be ex-BBC. I mean, I find myself throwing things at the TV sometimes, shouting and screaming at the radio. It's very occasionally that we ever get anything really worthwhile on network or world service BBC these days. But last week, there was a bit of an exception, a blip, where they had a guy from Tehran University on the BBC World Service. He spent about 5 or 6 minutes and absolutely clearly out exactly what the situation was from a Tehran point of view. So, you know, much as we like to curse and malign most of the output of the mainstream press, just occasionally there is a little blip and you get a little bit of the opposite point of view, because that really is the big sign, as everyone knows, that things are going wrong in our media, in our journalism, is when we don't get balance. And so you're just getting one side. It's what we've had, and I'm sure you have as well with Venezuela, the mass media just looking at one side of this and not really giving any proper, you know, sort of prime time airtime to the Maduro government, not the Maduro regime, as they want us to think. No, it's a Maduro government, and their point of view. So, yeah, so mass media, fascinating. It was really interesting to work in the middle of it all, in central London, for a year and other places in Brown Britain. But it's not an easy place to work, and I think you'll find there's some people, sycophants and toadies, working in there. There's some actually quite dark characters, really like sinister people, but there's also a few good people still who are just hanging on in there, doing what they can for us, and the knowledge that at some point they'll do something good, they'll actually get the truth out, and then they may lose their job. So there is a bit of everything in the middle of it.
So in 2017, for instance, one of the things that they were talking about was the war on information. And then, you know, I think last year was losing the narrative was somewhere in there as well. With all of the big tech censorship, the fact that you just talked about, you know, we're only seeing one side of the story in Venezuela in this country, and the same with Tehran and yours. What do you think the main agenda points are going to be? And are they even going to announce this thing this year? Where do you think this is going to be? You've already expressed that you doubt it's going to be in Europe because of the Brussels agreement falling apart, perhaps the turmoil in France with the Yellow Vest movement. What are your thoughts?
Well, it would make a lot of sense for it not to be in Europe because the European Union is falling apart right now. It's extremely sensitive subject. So if Bilderberg was to be in the EU countries, there might be spontaneous protests. I mean, you know, usually there's a leak of some sort, so it makes sense from a purely precautionary point of view to do it in North America, even though it really should be, if you look at the pattern of meetings of the year at events. But I mean, I've seen a change, you know, over since the Dresden, when I was at a Bilderberg meeting in 2016, from Europe being sort of on the edge of being pro-Brussels and anti, to now most of the major countries have got a very strong, if not a serious majority. I mean, we're talking about sort of 60-70% majority anti-Brussels. So the Yellow Vest movement is an expression of that. It's absolutely clear, although we're not being told that by the mainstream press. Most of the people are just totally anti-Brussels. Brussels is an anti-EU. They see it as a German-controlled thing. The German ordinary population, they don't really care whether it's German-controlled or not, but they're fed up with the unbridled immigration. And, of course, that spills to a certain extent into feeds the frenzy in the racist parties in all parts of Europe. But what you found, what we found here in Britain, for example, is and in Italy, is that there is most of the major parties that are Eurosceptic are absolutely awake to the fact that the far right is trying to parasite on them, and the racists are trying to parasite on them in order to really discredit the anti-Brussels movement. But you know, so in Italy, it's massive. It's something like 75% now of the population want to leave the EU, and this wasn't the case back in 2016 when we were in Dresden for the Bilderberg conference there, and when we were just about to have the Brexit referendum. It's also interesting, isn't it, how the British government have just completely kicked this into the long grass, this whole Brexit business. I mean, you know, incredible, really, that we're told we're going to leave on the 29th of March. That's what the law says. And then we're told, oh, no, you're not. And you know what I found so fascinating about this is looking at there was an amazing statement. I thought it was incredible. By one of the European aristocrats from the Habsburg Empire, saying, oh gosh, we think that actually Brexit is never going to happen, and it's just a reality TV show. We're watching it, and it's entertaining to see these people pretending on political stages and in the news and everything that maybe they're going to leave the EU, the Brexit people and the Brits. But actually, we know that we're so much in control of their finance and their politics. We've bought their politicians. We've bought their entire system. We've bought their media, that we know they're not going to leave because they're not going to be allowed to leave. It's going to Hotel California time. You know, you're in the EU, but you're not going to be able to leave the EU, even if you vote to leave, and we'll find some way of keeping you in. And the most cynical thing about Brexit, if you don't mind me just going on a bit about it, is look, what they're doing is they're just leaving it and leaving it and leaving it. They want another referendum, which is exactly what they did in France and Ireland in order to, when people voted the wrong way, they have another referendum until you vote the right way the EU want you to. And by that extra time, you know, so whether it's 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line, the elders of the tribe, you know, the elderly population who can remember life before the European Union and can remember all the promises that were made when we first joined the common market in the 1970s, they're dead. So a whole load of people die off. You get a whole load of very impressionable youngsters, sort of 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, that are also able to vote, and that can maybe move the vote away. Now, I don't know if it will this time, but it's a really cynical attitude to just try and keep going until a whole load of the people who are holding the intelligence and the experience of, you know, 70, 80 years of age, that sort of generation, die, and then those people can't vote anymore and they can't influence the decision. We just want the impressionable youngsters voting, and because we know we can manipulate them much more easily.
Well, when you talked about that, it does seem that way, at least from anybody that's paying any attention in the States, that you clearly voted to leave. And there's just now hearing after hearing, referendum after referendum, and it doesn't seem like the will of the people is going to be. And I think that's because the European Union, let's face it, is one of those globalist arms of control, of currency, of region, that's really created by people who have invested in this Bilderberg group that we're talking about, you know, the Rockefellers of the world, the Kissingers of the world. And now, you know, with that power shifting to technocrats like Thiel and others, I'm not sure if Schmidt's going to be there this year. I wasn't sure he even was in 17 and 18. And I know that he's now officially left Alphabet. But you talked about World War III. With all of the technology propaganda, the fact that they're censoring media, do you think it's more probable now that that is actually a possibility? I mean, you look at the United States, and we were promised with this Trump presidency, and a lot of the people in the alternative media trumpeted it and parroted it, that we were going to get out of Afghanistan, we were going to get out of Iraq, we were going to leave Syria. Trump even said so just before, you know, all of a sudden there was this chemical attack that never really happened, and we're shooting missiles. And now, even though it's largely been conceded that war is over, no, they still want United Nations sanctions, and they've got the likes of Ben Stiller out there shilling for that, so they never have to leave. They're talking about Iran like they never have before, trying to saber rattle with the Abraham Lincoln and others, even though that was scheduled back in April. So the question is, you know, I've heard you talk about World War III. What does that look like, and is that something that's going to be on the agenda this year?
Well, certainly it's absolutely clear from the leaks that Jim Tucker had back in 2003, bless him, that the meeting 2002 was discussing the invasion of Iraq, the Bilderbergs were. So those sorts of leaks we don't really get anymore. They've got a lot tighter on, and, you know, obviously we don't have the sleuthing powers of Jim Tucker anymore to do those kinds of leaks. But yes, certainly the Kosovo War, which is very important, the dismantling of Yugoslavia in the 1990s, which was a very positive semi-socialist state. It was a sort of half and half where the government ran most of the infrastructure in a publicly open and accountable way. So everyone knew that, for example, the water system, the transport systems were being run and how much money was going to who. And then there was also a large allowance for private businesses to do things like car manufacturing and things like that. But then it was quite well regulated. So it wasn't very easy to sack. It wasn't too easy to sack someone, for example, organizing in a trade union in the factory. They couldn't be sacked. So Yugoslavia was smashed to pieces by Bilderberg, and they were very much involved in that. It was quite obvious that they were. In fact, various of the people went straight from Bilderberg into managing that attack on, you know, dismantling of Yugoslavia and the destruction of Serbia, Bosnia, all these, you know, horrendous things that happened in the 90s. So, I mean, it would be extraordinary if they weren't involved in this. Of course they are. They were discussing Iran last year. And this is their big plan right now, it seems, is to... I mean, first of all, they've now got a government in Britain which is very, very compliant and pliable. I mean, the establishment is a whole different question. That is, the British establishment is a mainly land-owning and finance-owning and controlling oligarchy, and they don't necessarily do what Parliament wants, and they can put pressure on in other ways. But the government itself, for Downing Street and the cabinet, is very weak. You know, Theresa May was never elected. The Conservative Party, if they had a chance to vote, would get rid of her immediately. That is to say, the members, even the Tory MPs, would almost certainly get rid of her immediately if they had the chance to vote now, which they don't. And so you've got a whole load of people who have just made, basically by being sycophants and toadies, worked their way up the system into the Foreign Office, the Home Office, all the main, you know, the offices of state. So war is definitely a possibility. You know, certainly with the Christian Zionists like Mike Pompeo, who buy into this really. I was enlightened reading David Livingstone. He's a Canadian author. And a lot of his stuff focuses on the history of the occult and hidden, you know, so hidden power. And what he was explaining back in November when he came on the radio show I do here in Bristol, England, he was explaining how you've got a situation with the Zionists. They're this kind of fake version of Judaism. They've done a bit like what the Wahhabis have done with Islam. So they've taken these main major faiths, the Christian Zionists and the Jewish Zionists, and they've turned it into this kind of really peculiar, weird, twisted version of itself. So, you know, basically, the Jews never got their Messiah. Jesus, they don't recognize Jesus as the Messiah. So that what they're doing is they've created this Israeli state, the Zionists, over the years, starting with Palmerston, the British Prime Minister in the 1800s. You know, it took a while, but now they've created Israel, and the last people are dying who remember the world with no Israel. So there's a whole there's nobody really that remembers, oh, well, actually, Israel's quite a new state. So we're now in a situation where there could easily be a war, where Israel is threatened, the very existence of it is threatened. And from a twisted religious point of view, that is this Christian Zionist type point of view, this will force the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, to arrive on the scene. And I mean, there's all this, I think it's important to understand, there's this kind of pseudo-spiritual, fake spiritual background to a lot of what's going on. And it's not, you see, oil is not the only reason the Middle East is the focus for a lot of this. And so the only problem is, of course, is if Israel's existence is threatened, so it may be wiped out and wiped off the map by a war down there, then the Jewish Messiah must turn up to save the Jews. You know, it will invoke this Messiah character. And what David said, which kind of shocked me, but there's a sort of ring of truth to it, that this Messiah could end up being the Antichrist. So in other words, it might actually play out that the bad guys in the book of Revelation end up being what the Christian Zionists and the Israeli state think are the good guys. You know, so anyway, this is, I think, a fascinating aspect to what's going on now. Is this twisted version of an interpretation of biblical prophecy?
But what people don't really understand, and I think that this is the problem, is that that is very much a religious ethno-state. There's a region when Netanyahu says Israel isn't for everybody. It's because they do believe in these prophecies. They do believe, you know, it's not just about the Golan Heights region and Genie Energy and the oil. Believe me, that gets a lot of powerful people behind it. You know, it gets Trump, for instance, saying, listen, we finally got to recognize that this region is Israel's. No other nation state has ever done so.
Let me tell you, hang on, sorry to interrupt you, but with Trump, I think it's much more blackmail, actually. I don't know if he really believes this stuff. He's just basically told, look, you know, I want you to recognize the Golan Heights, and if you recognize the Golan Heights, Mueller's investigation will go away. You know, that's the sort of deal I think that's being done nowadays. There's a lot of people that don't actually really buy into it, but they're just forced to buy into it by blackmail. And blackmail is really the way I think that politics works in the West nowadays.
Well, I think that that's certainly a possibility. But I think there's a lot of backdoor deals we haven't been hearing about. But the bottom line is he's given his entire military support to that. And when you talk about, you know, prophecy and stuff, listen, people still, like, you're a Christian. People believe this stuff. People believe revelations. And again, if you look at all this stuff, yes, the Dome of the Rock has to be smashed. Solomon's Temple has to be rebuilt. You know, this fake Messiah has to rule for a certain time. And then he is revealed, quote unquote, as the Antichrist. And when you have world leaders believing in this stuff, that they have to bring about this stuff, I think it's a dangerous situation. But like you said, a lot of these people are at the top of the heap. And I don't think people understand that. You know, I think that we've been pushed into such a secular type society that when you tell people this stuff, or, you know, when I was a kid and you would talk about Satanism, you'd get that cartoon version of some heavy metal goth guy with makeup that was unhappy, and then you find out, no, it's this very prominent businessman with all these connections. So I do think that's lost on the populace, and with Bilderberg especially, you know, there isn't an occultic outward aspect like something like the Bohemian Grove, which happens later in the summer. So, you know, I definitely think there are connections there. I really hope that we're not on the verge of World War III and those prophecies coming to fruition, my friend.
Well, I mean, I think we have to just be awake and aware to it if it does happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think there's also been some pushback today, in fact, to this lunchtime from the Foreign Office here in London saying, you know, this is the last thing in the world we want to happen, you know, to the Americans, although it disappeared then off the headlines on the BBC mid-afternoon. No more discussion of that. And that won't be on the news tonight, I don't imagine. But look, you know, I think you just have to be able to, I think, pick apart this. The motivations. I think the main motivation, really, of course, is just money and power. They want power, but they are also have to use these kinds of religious conceits in order to try and make it look credible and make it look, like something that somebody can believe in, rather than that it's just greed and power. So it's about, I suppose, putting layers of appearance on the outside of what is really just, you know, an enormous great power grab. And I don't think, you know, I think we're dealing with nihilists, really, people that have no, I mean, you could use the term anarcho-capitalist, which I don't hear used a lot, but I like it because it means that you're not interested in the law, you just want to obtain money and power, wealth and property, and that is all it's really about. And it becomes an obsession. I think it's like a drug. You know, maybe a lot of these people are on opiates anyway. That's quite feasible, and I know some are. But actually, it really is just the power itself and the wealth and the control becomes a drug, because people, you know, they've got no real spiritual side to them. So they just have this earthly, worldly side that just wants to acquire more and more and more. And that gives their life some sort of value and meaning, which they can't find elsewhere. But, I mean, whether it's actually going to happen, it looks certainly possible that something may kick off between the Israelis and the Iranians. If it does, the US will be straight down there helping out, of course. And then you've got the possibility of, you know, the Russians getting involved. If that means US and Russia, then potentially China being dragged in as well on the side of the Russians. So, I mean, this could be, I mean, I'm not saying it is, but I think you just have to be really, you know, aware that it could turn into, you know, as big an increase in, you know, war and death on World War II as World War II was on World War I, you know. So World War I was fairly contained in Europe and obviously in Middle East too. But the World War II spread out right, you know, across into the Pacific. But, you know, a war between the US and China is going to be a global affair. And so I think, you know, it might be a good time now just to make people aware that that is a potential and try and make sure it never happens.
Tony, I want to thank you so much for this insight. Hopefully we can get a hold of you and get you maybe in a week when we know more about the agenda or when and where it's going to be when we learn that. So we will be in touch.
These guys really are the Bond villains. I mean, I think if you watch any Bond movie, just think of it as a Bilderberg, you know, Bilderberg meeting. And I'm not just saying that, because Ian Fleming, the Bond author, was very much aware of some of the power playing behind this. He was working for naval intelligence in London during World War II, and he just simply he was aware of the deals that were being done, particularly for the billion or so pounds worth, I'm not sure in dollars, probably $3 billion worth of money or wealth that the Nazis had looted in World War II. And he could see that there was all sorts of stuff going on behind the scenes there, where there was secret cooperation going on between Martin Bormann, who was the Reichsleiter of the Nazi party during most of the war, and Desmond Morton, who was Major Desmond Morton, who was Churchill's private secretary. So, you know, there's all sorts of dodgy stuff. So Fleming was writing in some of his Bond novels quite literally about the gangsterism behind the Second World War, and I think the same gangsterism is still flourishing today, and Bilderberg's a big part of that. And the Nazi system, I think, you know, there's going to be a new kind of totalitarianism, police state type system. It'd probably be more sophisticated than the Nazis were, but it's interesting studying the Nazis and looking at that as a model for the future to critique what's happening today. Things like the cashless society, you know, mass surveillance. I mean, the Nazis were doing mass surveillance, of course, with their Hollerith machines, and IBM helping the Nazis to, you know, pick out where the Jews were so they could be rounded up and arrested easily. And so if this world war does kick in, of course, we're going to see a kind of, you know, autocratic police state. And I would suggest that you might actually find elements within the establishment, both in the US and Europe, European countries and Britain, fighting back against it too. You know, it's not going to be an easy win for the Bilderberg faction.
All right. I thank you so much for that insight. And like I said, we will be in touch as we learn more. Follow Tony Gosling at Tony Gosling. And he's also got a website as well. That is 911forum.org.uk. Thank you again, sir.
If you want to have a listen, sorry, websites, I've got something called this
one. Hopefully I can get you on at the end and we'll put those in the links. I want to thank Tony Gosling again. I will put his websites in the description below, in the comment. I apologize for that, but we're going to be having him on again. So thank you again, Tony. Guys, if you are not subscribed and you enjoyed this, please, please, please hit that subscribe button right now. Ring that bell for notifications. Share this stuff on social media. Remember, I'm doing 3 videos a day over at News for a Change here. Can't beat that. And then doing 1 video a day over at We Are Change. And we've got a fundraiser going. We're over a third of the way there to go to Bilderberg 2019. Thank you guys so much for all your support, and I appreciate you. We'll see you soon.